Yule's measurement confirmed my general impression, which was that the shroud lines were something like half as long as the pit was wide. Once I explained the general plan to the Orthenans, they began to move toward the edge of the pit, parting to either side and circumventing the rim while keeping the shroud lines taut. The chute glided across the ground in fits and starts. We had to get a few people underneath it to coax and waft it over snags, but presently the leading edge of the fabric curled over the rim of the pit, and then the movement took on a life of its own as gravity helped it forward. I hoped the Orthenans on the ends of the lines would have the good sense to let go the ropes if they felt themselves being pulled toward the edge, but the chute wasn't nearly heavy enough to cause any such problems. Once all of the fabric had gone over the edge and the Orthenans had spaced themselves evenly around it, the thing became quite manageable. The chute seemed to cover about half of the pit's area. The Orthenans by now had figured out the general idea, which was that we wanted to suspend the parachute above the Teglon Plaza as a canopy. They began to move about en masse, adjusting its position and its altitude with no further direction from me. When it seemed right, I jogged around the perimeter, urging them to move away from the hole and trace their shroud lines out as far as they could go and to lash the ends around any solid anchors they could find. For about a third of them, this ended up being the top of the Consent's outer wall. Other lines ended up finding purchase on trees, cloister pillars, trestles, rocks, or sticks hammered into the ground. Hearing an engine, I looked over to the top of the ramp and saw that Yule was gingerly driving his house on wheels down into the pit. The better, I guessed, to cook breakfast for the geometers. I sprinted over and dived into the cabin with him. This sparked a general rebellion among the Orthenans, who, ignoring Landasher's earlier order, followed us down on foot. Yule and I drove down the ramp in silence. The look on his face was as if he were just on the verge of hysterical laughter. When we reached the bottom, he parked amid the ruins of the temple, just near the analemma. He shut off the engine. He turned to look at me and finally broke the silence.
"I don't know how this is going to come out," he said, "but I sure am glad I came with you."
And before I could tell him how glad I was of his company, he was out the door, striding over to join Cord. Radiant heat from the underside of the vehicle was making it difficult to approach. Yule went back to his fetch and got some reflective emergency blankets. Cord, Orlo, and I used these as bolts. Most of the vehicle was above us, so we put out a call for ladders. It had been difficult to guess the thing's size before, but now I was able to borrow a measuring rod from the archaeological dig and measure it at about 20 feet in diameter. I hadn't brought anything to write with, but Saman was using his G-jaw in Spelecaptor mode, taking everything down, so I called out the numbers. A helicopter approached. We could hear it through the canopy. It circled the compound a few times, its downwash creating huge eye-catching disturbances in the canopy. Then it withdrew to a higher altitude and hovered. It could not land here because of the parachute. All the land within the walls was built on or cultivated with trees and trellises. They'd have to land outside and knock on the door, or scale the wall. So we had stalled them for a few minutes. But everyone felt desperately short of time now. Suddenly a dozen ladders were available, all different sizes, all handcrafted of wood. The Orthenans began lashing them together to make a scaffold right next to the probe, on the side that seemed to have a sort of hatch. Cord clambered up and found a place to stand on a ladder that had been placed horizontally. I felt proud watching her. So much about this might have been overwhelming. At some level, perhaps, she was overwhelmed. But this probe was, after all, a machine. She could tell how it worked. And as long as she held her focus on that, none of the other stuff mattered.
"Talk to us,"
Saman called to her, staring at the screen of his G-jaw as he lined up his shot. "There is clearly a removable hatch," she said. "It is trapezoidal with rounded corners, 2 feet wide at the base, 1.5 at the top, 4 high, curved like the fuselage." She was doing a funny kind of dance because the scaffold was still being improvised beneath her. She was poised between 2 ladder rungs and the ladder kept shifting. She was casting an array of lapping shadows on what she wanted to see, so she fished a headlamp out of her vest, turned it on, and played its beam over the streaked and burnt surface of the probe.
"Can we just go ahead and call it a door?" Saman asked.
"Okay. There is geometer writing stenciled around the door. Letters about an inch high."
"Stenciled?"
Saman asked. "Yeah." Cord stretched the band of the lamp over her head and adjusted its angle, freeing her hands.
"Literally stenciled?"
"Yeah. In the sense that they took a piece of paper with letter-shaped cutouts and held it up to the metal and slapped paint on it." I heard a series of metallic raps. Cord was touching a magnet to various places around the door. "None of this is ferrous." Then a screeching noise. "I can't scratch it with my steel knife blade. Maybe a high-temp stainless alloy."
"Fascinating," Orlo called. "Can you get it open?"